The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Got a lot of nice feedback on the birds that I mentioned yesterday. That always gets a few comments. Hello from, I'm going to mispronounce it, but I'll give it a go. Neston Wirral in England. Richard will have to help me out with that later. It says, we also found a great spotted woodpecker feeding its young at the weekend, over the weekend. What a treat, it says. And then another one. Good morning. Was dark this morning. Must have rained. There may be pain in the night and joy in the morning. Thank you for the woodpecker shot. I'm a birder like my mom. And then another one says, love the bird picture. So some good feedback. I filled up the feeders yesterday, by the way. And then sure enough, the woodpecker was there in moments. And he had a friend this time, two woodpeckers, enjoying all of the fresh food that I put out. The funniest thing was when the wood pigeon showed up, and he was perched on the top platform of the feeder, and the woodpecker was trying to shoo him away. He was suspended in air, basically hanging off the ledge of the top platform, and then sticking his head around the corner to try to jab at the wood pigeon. And the wood pigeon's probably twice, maybe three times the size of this woodpecker, and the pigeon finally left, and then the woodpecker just hopped on top and continued to eat. And then a second one, as I say, joined him just moments later. So some good entertainment right after yesterday's broadcast. One other listener, by the way, says, this 1 hour goes too fast. Just like when I read the Bible, it's hard to stop reading it. What a world it would be if people would read the Bible. This morning, we recorded a program on the crisis in America and just tried to summarize some of the things that have happened over the last 5, 6, 7 days. And of course, give the Bible's perspective. Tell the viewer what the solution is. I went through some of the content from, I think it was Monday's or Tuesday's program, where we talked about the days of Noah and just all the violence that's spreading over the earth. And then making matters worse, you have so many powerful people, powerful commentators or commentators in powerful positions, who are basically looking at the violence with us and then telling us it's not really violence. It's not really happening. I mentioned the cover-up of what actually happened in and around the White House Sunday night and early Monday morning. Yesterday's show, I concluded with that clip from President Trump where he said it was a disgrace. What was happening in Washington, D.C., right around the White House in the United States of America, all of this disgraceful activity, terrorism, really. And then the police push back the lines, and sure enough, we get all of this coverage saying that the police were aggressive and the police, they were spreading tear gas everywhere, which was a lie. Never happened. The media coverage is just outrageous. It's outrageous, the coverage. They want to say it's the police who are being violent. They want to say it's the police. The police, that's the problem, they tell us. The truth is just the opposite. The truth is that the police, they're not strong enough. And the president keeps urging them to crack down to restore order. What was the headline here? It was in Richard's news today. Inside the push to tear gas protesters ahead of the Trump photo op. It was just a photo op, they say, him walking across the street. Apparently, he's supposed to stay down in his bunker. When he's down there, they criticize him for hiding out, as if he wanted to go down into the bunker. That's basically the Secret Service doing their jobs. Then he comes out. Then he gives a speech. Then he makes a symbolic walk across the street. Well, it was an actual walk that symbolized something in the minds of Americans. That, look, we've got to go and restore order now. And here are all these headlines. Police tear gassing the protesters and so on. All for a picture? Here's the headline at Fox. Park police say D.C. protesters cleared because they attacked cops. Not because of the Trump church visit. They were attacking the cops. They would have stormed the White House were it not for these Secret Service members risking their lives. It says on Monday, the USPP worked with the United States Secret Service to have temporary fencing installed inside Lafayette Park. At approximately 6:33 p.m., violent protesters on H Street, Northwest, began throwing projectiles, including bricks, frozen water bottles, and caustic liquids. The protesters also climbed onto the historic building at the north end of Lafayette Park that was destroyed by arson days prior. Destroyed by arson! It says intelligence had revealed calls for violence against the police, and officers found caches of glass bottles, baseball bats, and metal poles hidden along the street. And the media, the major media, are telling you that the problem here is the police. It says to curtail the violence that was underway, the USPP, following established policy, issued three warnings over a loudspeaker to alert demonstrators on H Street to evacuate the area. Horse-mounted patrol, civil disturbance units, and additional personnel were used to clear the area. It says, as many of the protesters became more combative, continued to throw projectiles, and attempted to grab officers' weapons, officers then employed the use of smoke canisters and pepper balls. Well, that's a little bit of the truth. Amid all of the lies and the deception, that was happening just in and around the White House area, surrounding the White House. And then, of course, right along with that, you have New York City. It looks like it calmed down a little bit last night, but two nights ago, it was like something you'd imagine in Baghdad. Now it's all being boarded up. You've got the most famous shopping street in the world, and it's boarded up like an emptied or abandoned ghetto. Fifth Avenue in New York City. It's so bad, or it got so bad the other night, that here's what the left wing, far to the left wing governor of New York, had to say yesterday, clip 11.
You have 38,000 NYPD people. It is the largest police department in the United States of America. Use 38,000 people and protect property. Use the police, protect property and people. Look at the videos. It was a disgrace.
That's the governor of New York reacting to what happened in New York City. 38,000 people on the New York Police Department rolls. A small army, in other words. That violence, that looting that you saw yesterday, it could have been easily stopped. But they're getting orders from the mayor. The mayor's over the department. And basically, it's the approach that the mayor of Minneapolis took. Just stand down. Step aside. Give them the space to destroy. They had plenty of space. And did they ever destroy? And now the windows are boarded up. And now New Yorkers, after 2-3 months of lockdown, now it's this. God's trying to get our attention, don't you think? Do you think God's trying to get the attention of New Yorkers? Here's Mayor de Blasio's statement from yesterday, clip 12.
We do not need, nor do we think it's wise for the National Guard to be in New York City, nor any armed forces. I'm going to tell you why. This is really important we have this out right now. If someone needs a history lesson, when outside armed forces go into communities, no good comes of it.
As if the last couple nights have been, you know, just peachy for New York, yeah. He doesn't need any extra help. He's doing fine, he thinks. Not even the radical left-wing governor over him agrees with that. He said yesterday that de Blasio could be displaced if need be. And there's people in the streets calling for his resignation. And then there's the others. The New York Times is calling for de Blasio to resign because he's in bed with the cops. They want someone who distances himself from the cops, from the police. Because remember, the police, they're the bad guys. And if you're going to be the mayor of New York City, then you don't want to stand behind the police department. They're a target. This is the reaction of one New York police department officer after the disastrous rampage on early Monday morning. Says, almost 32 years with the New York Police Department, I have never felt such disgust, hopelessness, and anger. Manhattan was occupied territory tonight. We were totally outnumbered by miscreants. They were brazen, laughing, and rampant. It was so prevalent, there was nothing a police officer could do according to the rules and expectations of the Democrat Party. Just like Minneapolis, you've got a far-left Democrat mayor. You've got a far-left governor. I don't know what the police chief is like. I know this. There's quite a few minorities that work in the New York Police Department. Almost half. But they're all the enemy. We're led to believe that they're all white and they're all racist. And they all abuse their power. All of them. It's ingrained in their thinking. It says here, it was so prevalent that there, well, further on, it says, our leaders took knees of solidarity with protesters during the day. So the leaders of the police department, they took knees of solidarity with the protesters. As you heard yesterday, the mayor's own daughter, she was arrested in the protest. And he praised her. They are with the protesters. The police are told to stand down, and the protesters, well, at least for a night, they were able to violently loot and pillage their way through Fifth Avenue. Saks Fifth Avenue, Macy's. This officer says, zero leadership, zero courage, complete and utter pandering. So that's a little snapshot of New York City, not unlike so many other big cities in the United States, ruled by the radical left for decades. Heather McDonald, she wrote this piece at the Wall Street Journal, and you would have seen a similar one during the Obama years when we were being told over and over again that everyone in law enforcement is corrupt and racist. Says George Floyd's death in Minneapolis has revived the Obama-era narrative that law enforcement is endemically racist. Remember all the policemen that were shot and killed during the Obama years? Now they're being shot at again. You've got one in Las Vegas hanging on for dear life, shot in the back of his head during these peaceful protests that we're told about. Another retired officer, he was shot dead in St. Louis. And then I told you yesterday about the ones that are being run over. Vehicles just running right over. Policemen. Policemen being beat and dragged in the streets. Heather McDonald says, this charge of systemic police bias was wrong during the Obama years and remains so today. However sickening the video of Floyd's arrest. Listen again. However sickening the video of Floyd's arrest, it isn't representative of the 375 million annual contacts that police officers have with civilians. It says a solid body of evidence finds no structural bias in the criminal justice system with regard to arrest, prosecution, or sentencing. If you want to look at the evidence, you find no structural bias. But the mob's not interested in facts. The mob is not interested in evidence. It says crime and suspect behavior, not race, determine most police actions. Of course there's mistakes. Of course there's the occasional bad apple. There has been from the beginning of America's history. And yes, as I said yesterday, you can see it in the Ezekiel booklet. This is America's number one sin. And we're still being cursed for it. The sin of slavery, I mean. But like I think one of the commentators yesterday on Fox News pointed out, is there a nation in the world that has worked harder to right that historical wrong? Or we might add, that has shed more blood to try to right the wrong than the United States? And furthermore, as far as freedoms and liberties and opportunities, is there a nation in the world that would provide more for anyone, whether white, black, or brown? Well, Heather McDonald says, a solid body of evidence finds no structural bias in the criminal justice system with regard to arrest, prosecution, or sentencing. It's based on actions. Actions. In most cases, it's based on actions, the police activity, arrests, and so on. Now, when you look at the police force, city by city, St. Louis, 36% of them are minorities, Hispanics, blacks, and Asians, and so on. 36%. That's in St. Louis. And then in New York City, 47% are minorities. If you get pulled over or questioned by a law enforcement official in New York, chances are he's black or he's Hispanic. And it's the same in Minneapolis. It's the same in every big city. I think New York maybe leads the way. So if the war is against the police, well, what does this mean? Back to Heather McDonald's article. It says, in 2019, police officers fatally shot 1,004 people, most of whom were armed or otherwise dangerous. African Americans were about a quarter of those killed by cops last year, 235, a ratio that has remained stable since 2015. She says the share of black victims is less than what the black crime rate would predict, since police shootings are a function of how often officers encounter armed and violent suspects. It says in 2018, the latest year for which data have been published, African Americans made up 53% of known homicide offenders in the U.S. and commit about 60% of robberies, though they are 13% of the population. Is it still okay to bring this up? Can we talk about statistics like this? Or does this get blotted out as well? It says the police fatally shot 9 unarmed blacks and 19 unarmed whites in 2019. According to a Washington Post database. This is from the left-wing Washington Post, these stats. It says down from 38 and 32, respectively, in 2015. So shooting and killing unarmed individuals, whether white or black, it's going way down. Even since 2015, says the Post defines unarmed broadly to include such cases as a suspect in Newark, New Jersey, who had a loaded handgun in his car during a police chase. It says in 2018, there were 7,407 black homicide victims. Assuming a comparable number of victims last year, those nine unarmed black victims of police shootings represent 0.1% of all African Americans killed in 2019. 0.1%. She continues, by contrast, a police officer is 18 and a half times more likely to be killed by a black male than an unarmed black male is to be killed by a police officer. She goes on to talk about the violence, the bloodshed, and the carnage that happened in Chicago just over Memorial Day weekend. 10 African Americans killed in drive-by shootings. 10 people on one weekend in one city in the United States of America. And yet, if you listen to the major media, one would think the only danger, the only violence that's even happening in the United States is police brutality. There's a lot of people being killed right now. And who do we need to try to find out who's guilty? To try to find the perpetrators? You need the police. It says police shootings are not the reason that blacks die of homicide at 8 times the rate of whites and Hispanics combined. She says criminal violence is the problem that should have been addressed before the mass riots and looting. And now you're seeing the criminal violence on display in a massive way, and still you still have voices, strong, powerful voices saying, you know, look, it's not really happening. Or if it is, it's not really that bad. Heather McDonald says, finally, the false narrative of systemic police bias resulted in targeted killings of officers during the Obama presidency. And now it's beginning to pick up again with those incidents I mentioned, Las Vegas, St. Louis. The author of the 1619 Project, we've talked about this project produced by the New York Times, the journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones. She was interviewed by Christiane Amanpour yesterday. I think she's still with CNN. But they had a lengthy interview, and of course, the major media, they want to get the take from the 1619 Project. You've been hearing a lot about that. People saying 400 years, for four centuries, this has been going on, systemic racism. And so now we're watching all of this violence, all of this mayhem, this chaos, this destruction and burning. And Christiane Amanpour wants to get the take from the author herself. And here's what she said, clip one.
Ultimately, our protest is only as successful as we can convince white Americans to actually comply with the Constitution and treat black Americans as full citizens.
So unless they're treated fairly, then it will continue. This is why they need to be, as Barack Obama said the other day, they need to be praised. They deserve our respect. The protesters, they deserve our respect and support, not condemnation. Sam brought up a good point this morning. You remember how they went after Donald Trump when he said there was some good people? And they immediately took that to mean that President Trump was pro-KKK. Go back and look at the furor over his comments at Charlottesville. And furthermore, if you have a protest in Michigan at the state capitol, they will search every inch of that state to look for a Confederate flag. And if they find one, the whole protest, the whole group is guilty. And now you have all of these hooligans, these thugs, these terrorists, raising cities, burning them to the ground. And you have the major media looking or telling you that there's so many good people out there. This author went on to say this. Listen to this, clip two.
I would not describe looting as violence. Looting is property damage, but it is not violence.
That's a Pulitzer Prize winner at the New York Times. This is maybe the most famous journalist at the Times. The New York Times saying that looting is not violence. It's not violent. There's a little property damage, okay. And you've heard a lot of that language, haven't you? That's what the mayor said when he told the police to get out of the police precinct. Look, it's just a little bit of property. What's the big deal? What's the big deal if it goes up in flames? We can always build it later. We can build another one. And so what happens if the entire nation goes up in flames? She went on to say this, clip two, three.
I would not describe looting as violence. Looting is property damage, but it is not violence. And I would actually like to go to Martin Luther King's own words. He wrote a letter to the American Psychological Association in September of 1967. And what he said is that looting comes from the most enraged and deprived Negro, and it allows them to take hold of consumer goods with the ease that a white man does by using his purse. Often the Negro does not even want what he takes. He wants the experience of taking. Negroes have committed crimes, but they are the derivative crimes, and they are born of the greater crimes of the white society. So when we ask Negroes to abide by the law, let us also demand that the white man abide by the law in the ghettos as well. So I think we need to have some perspective on what exactly we're seeing when we call that violence and looting.
So and this is something that a lot of people really believe in. They believe that you could damage, burn, even kill, but it doesn't rise to the level of the crimes committed against the black community. And so it's a call to arms, basically. This is a declaration of war. You are justified. Search and destroy. Pillage, burn, smash, pummel. Yesterday we talked about the communist insurrection. That's what you're hearing. This is from the academic. You can just look at the race, I suppose, but this is coming from higher education. And what was it that Mr. Armstrong said about the communist infiltration? And the spreading influence right through the nation. And as I said yesterday, so many of these protesters, so many of these rioters, they're young people. They're young people coming out of the university. And before that, probably coming out of, in a lot of cases, fatherless homes. And now look at the damage. And consider, again, when you talk about higher education in its hand, and then you have, again, the highly educated in the left-wing media, and they're there just practically worshiping voices like the one you just heard. Listen to Christiane Amanpour's response, clip four.
I think it's so interesting to hear you say this. And
so interesting to hear this. Wow, looting is not really violent. It's really interesting. It's really interesting for you to say that really, if you get out there and loot and pillage, if you cause a lot of damage and suffering and anguish, like that poor old woman from Minneapolis, we played the clip on Monday, then maybe you can achieve what you want. Throw the tantrum and you'll finally get their attention. Here again is the major media praising the protesters, This is clip 8.
I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not generally speaking unruly, but fires have been started. And
first thing I want to make perfectly clear, this has been almost entirely peaceful. In fact, completely peaceful.
It's been a mostly peaceful protest. But then they chose to move in.
Many of these protests have been largely peaceful.
Mostly peaceful.
Mostly peaceful.
Mostly peaceful.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I'm looking at those live pictures next to you, and they seem very peaceful.
There are always folks on the fringes of protests that do the things that we don't like.
A few people who break a few windows and burn a few cars.
They just threw something on fire, Chris, a firecracker.
No one should be destructing property and that sort of thing, but I understand the anger.
Discount people who are doing things to public property that they shouldn't be doing. It does have to be understood that this city has got, for the last several years, an issue with police.
So many good people out there who want change and who are demanding change.
Our country was started because this is how the Boston Tea Party rioting. So do not get it twisted and think that, oh, this is something that has never happened before. And then this is so terrible. And where are we and these savages and all of that? This is how this country was started.
This is America. This is good old fashioned Boston Tea Party, says CNN. Don't get uptight. Don't worry about the damage. And as far as the damage, just property. Looting isn't violent. That's higher education. Listen to, again, this is Nicole Hannah-Jones, the author of the 1619 Project, clip 5.
When we think about how someone taking an act to take something from some big box name store, it is symbolic. That one pair of shoes that you've stolen from, Foot Locker is not going to change your life, but it is a symbolic taking.
So looting isn't violence, looting isn't really looting either. It's just kind of a symbolic taking, symbolism. Now, what about shooting? What about shooting and killing? This is from a local paper in Iowa regarding the tragic death of Italia Marie Kelly. Davenport, Iowa. It's actually reporting on not just her death, but it says two people were killed in Iowa overnight. This is, I think, a couple nights ago, including a 22-year-old woman in a series of deadly shootings during violent unrest and destruction of property. A police officer was also injured in the town of Davenport in the U.S.'s state's east as law enforcement responded to more than 20 shots fired calls and dozens of disturbances. There were 4 shooting victims, 2 of which were fatalities. 2 were non-fatal, including 1 officer. It says Italia Marie Kelly was leaving the protest at Davenport with a friend around midnight on Sunday when she was struck from the back by a bullet, an aunt told the New York Post. She was leaving the protesters or leaving the protest because it was starting to turn violent. And then she was shot in the back and collapsed in a Walmart parking lot and then died later at the hospital. This was her sister's reaction on Twitter, clip 9.
Because one of you, a protester, shot my sister. A protester. Not even the police. Because you guys, I lost my sister. I lost my sister because you're so mad at the police. You're hurting everyone else. You're so mad at the police. You guys killed my sister. For those who don't know, it wasn't the police who shot my sister. It was one of y'all.
You're so mad at the police that you're hurting everyone else. And now they need the police to try to find who killed that girl's sister in Iowa late Sunday night. This killing in St. Louis, the retired police captain. This is from the Washington Times. It says, a retired St. Louis police captain killed by people who broke into a pawn shop after protests turned violent was a gregarious and outspoken leader who mentored youths and insisted on strict ethical conduct among his employees, a longtime colleague said Tuesday. This is an elderly black man who was defending a pawn shop against the looting, the protesters, the rioters, and he was shot in the head. David Dorn, 77, was found dead on the sidewalk in front of Lee's Pawn and Jewelry about 2:30 a.m. Tuesday. No arrests have been made. The shooting and theft apparently was posted on Facebook Live, but the video has since been taken down. See, that's how it works. If it's the Floyd video, that's everywhere. That's distributed. That's promoted. This one gets taken down because you don't need to see this. That doesn't fit in the narrative. Just delete it. It came on a violent night in St. Louis where four officers were shot. Officers were pelted with rocks and fireworks, and 55 businesses were burglarized or damaged, including a convenience. This is all symbolic, keep in mind. It's not really violence. It's more of a symbol. It says police also shot and gravely injured a burglary suspect who they say shot at officers. So it's back and forth. It's like a war zone. It says Dorn, who was black, was a friend of the pawn shop's owner and frequently checked on the business when alarms went off, says his wife. So he was the husband of this woman. He was the father of children, a grandfather, as one of the bystanders was saying. It says former St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Fitch knew Dorn for 30 years and said they became close friends when Dorn and his wife were leading the St. Louis Police Department's Explorers program for young people interested in law enforcement careers while Fitch was leading the county's program. He was very dedicated to youth, especially disadvantaged youth, said Fitch, who led the St. Louis County Police Department from 2009 to 14. He wanted to see them succeed. He wanted to be a role model for those young men and women to go into law enforcement. It says, finally, Dorn's personality was bigger than life, Fitch said. He was a fun guy, a happy guy. You never had to wonder what he was thinking when somebody did something incredibly stupid, like a crime, because he would just say it as he saw it. That's law enforcement. Gunned down. Gunned down by the protesters who are out seeking justice. Justice for George. This is what George would have wanted, I guess. Do you think any of these stories are getting any publicity at CNN? Do you think they're going to go get that 19-year-old sister whose sister was gunned down from behind? I think every case I've read, it was a shooting from behind in the back of the head. Here's one more clip from this Project 1619 author, clip six.
And so when we think about what the social contract was and who created it, it is that if you follow the rules, if you do the right things, then you will be able to access an equal society. And that has never been true for Black Americans, and particularly for the lowest income, most segregated Black Americans.
And so don't follow the rules. Don't follow the rules, she says. If you think about the social contract that says follow the rules, do the right thing, and then you'll be able to access an equal society. It's not working, she says. So break the rules, throw the tantrum, destroy the city, kill your own people even. She said, finally, clip 7.
So you cannot regularly not include them in the social contract, regularly violate the promises that this country makes to Americans, and then at this moment in time say, well, you should abide by the laws and the rules of our country because that's the right thing to do. There's no reason to expect that people who have regularly been left out will comply with this right now.
You can't expect them to obey the laws. You've got to give them space to destroy. You've got to step aside and let them smash up Macy's. You've got to let them ruin businesses. You've got to let them kill people. If a few people get killed in the crossfire, then so be it. This is America today. This is America 2020. There's a piece at the Wall Street Journal. I've never been so afraid for America. And this author, he remembers the riots of the 1960s. He says, smoke was billowing in the distance from the south side. As I drove in Chicago, where I was a student at the time, I remember saying to myself, it can't get worse than this. For more than half a century, it didn't. Until now. A health crisis, an economic crisis, and a racial crisis have converged to produce a clear and present danger to American democracy. U.S. enemies abroad cannot contain their glee. America's friends regret our plight and fear for the future of a world order that was built on a foundation of American power, principles, and persistence. Think of the impact this has on the whole world, he says. The post-American world. Is it going to be a world where there's freedom and opportunity for people of all races? Is it going to be a better world for the black race? You better look into your Bible and think about what's coming. I mentioned this article in the Why the Trumpet Watches section of the website. The destruction of the rule of law in America. Why do we follow this? Why have we been talking about it for more than two decades? It gives some great history in this piece. I'll just read a bit of it here for you. It says, the U.S. is an exceptional nation in a world in world history. As no other nation, it has stood for limited government, separation of powers, rule of law, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, free market economy, and other principles outlined in its founding document, the United States Constitution. So supposing even in all of that you've struggled, well, consider the alternatives before you destroy everything. It says these have contributed to making America incredibly free and prosperous, and so on. It says more and more, however, these founding laws and principles are under attack. Key pillars of American history and identity are being vilified and destroyed. Educators are teaching oncoming generations that the enduring narrative about individual liberty and constitutional checks and balances are a mask for wealthy white European men to dominate. Such thinking has made its way into the highest levels of America's government, to the point that on many issues, politicians share the views of the nation's worst enemies. This is the Philadelphia Trumpet, tomorrow's news today. We posted this 3 years ago. We've been writing about the breakdown in law and order for decades. And where is it leading? Look at history. Has anarchy ever ended well? This is the Boston Tea Party. They say. It says this trend is terribly dangerous. Contempt for America's heritage is fueling a wholesale departure from it. Whereas the founders established a nation on biblical morality, this growing movement is amoral and irreligious. It is anti-history, anti-tradition, anti-authority, and anti-law. That pretty much sums up the 1619 Project. All of these gross and glaring errors. And she wins the Pulitzer Prize. And then Christine Amanpour has her on and interviews and says, wow, this is real. This is fascinating. This is so interesting what you're saying, that the looting is not really violent. We say at the Trumpet, a breakdown in the rule of law is devastating to a nation. A world, our world, is filled with nations where government simply does not enforce law and order. And as a result, criminality, corruption, bribery, thuggery, and lawlessness are rife, as are the squalor and low standards of living that always accompany them. This is what we're bringing on ourselves. And you have mayors, and you have governors, and you have attorney generals, and you have district leaders, you have state leaders. They're quite happy to see it happen. They're quite happy to at least step aside. Says America's founding fathers warned explicitly of this very problem. Goes through and gives some quotes from George Washington. Just all these founders that established a society based on the rule of law. Says the U.S. Constitution is the foundation of the American Republic. And the Bible, in many ways, is the foundation of the United States Constitution. America's founders believed their republic would collapse if they didn't keep God's Ten Commandments. Well, they were right, and we're seeing it. We're seeing the collapse of a superpower. The images you've seen on television over the last week, these are not images projecting strength and power and positive influence around the world. These are the images of a superpower in decline. These are the images of a superpower fighting for its life. They're the images of a superpower in the last days of its temporary resurgence. The Washington Free Beacon. Let me just play this clip. I didn't have time to get to this yesterday, but this was Mark Levin the other day. Which number is it? I don't see it. Go ahead and play that. This is on his radio show just a couple nights ago.
And I'm telling you, I'm not urging it. I'm worried about it. That the more this goes on and the more it spreads, people could take matters into their own hands.
He's worried about the future of America, just like that author at the Wall Street Journal. That's a commentator that reaches tens of millions of people. The Washington Free Beacon had a piece the other day. An estimated 6 million guns have been sold since the coronavirus outbreak began in March, as May marked the third consecutive month of record high sales. More than 1.7 million guns were sold in May, according to an analysis by Small Arms and Analytics and Forecasting. That's an all-time record for the month and an 80% increase from 2019. People are buying guns by the millions. They're looking at the police standing down, and they're thinking about the last resort. Now, think about the prophecies. Think about Ezekiel 4 and 5. Think about Isaiah 1 and verse 7. Think about the chain of violence, Ezekiel 7. And then add to that all the other prophecies about tribulation, famine, disease, pestilence. We're living in the last days. We're living in it. Jesus said it would be just like the days of Noah. Are you ready for the transition from what's prophesied for the last days and what God will establish in the first days of the world tomorrow? That's what Noah was. As a preacher of righteousness, he was also a man in transition. He transitioned from the world that then was to this present world, the one we're living in right now. We should have learned the lesson from Noah, from the flood. But we haven't. We haven't, as I said earlier this week. It was just two generations after Noah, after the flood, that they returned to evil and corruption and violence. And this is where we are today on a mass scale. Acts chapter 3, this present evil world, it's hard to believe it actually started with a righteous man, Noah. But we have, you talk about getting away from the ideals of our founding fathers 250 some years ago. How far have we drifted from Noah, that great patriarch? How far removed are we from the great God who made us? Mr. Armstrong said in 1945, after the flood, sent as a judgment to prevent men from destroying themselves through sin, one would think the few survivors would have learned their lesson. You would think that kind of universal destruction? Well, there is hope. Acts 3:19 says, repent you therefore and be converted that your sins may be blotted out, when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord. Repent, be converted. Let God blot your sins out. The times of refreshing are coming. Noah's very name meant hope and comfort and rest. And that is coming to this dying world. That's coming to this violent world. Does it ever need rest and refreshment? Verse 20 says, and he shall send Jesus Christ, which was before preached unto you. That's the refreshment. God's family government, the marriage between Christ and the church, and the government of God established on this earth. Verse 21 says, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution of all things, which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began. Restitution there means the time of restoring. Restoring something that was taken away. Moffat calls it the Great Restoration. The establishment of God's government, it was taken away by a rebellious Lucifer who just shook his fist at God and said, I'm not being violent. He thought he was an angel of light. That's the way he viewed himself. I'm not a violent criminal. I'm not hostile to the laws of God. I'm an angel. I'm a sweet, precious angel. And yet everywhere that he went, there was a trail of destruction following behind him. That's about to change. With God's government comes God's system of education. As Herbert Armstrong wrote in 1984, all this world's evil begins with human life. Sorry, it begins when human life begins, with children. Children. Think about how many young people are out on the streets of America destroying American cities. They're a product of today's educational system. What an indictment against modern education and the broken family. And we could go right down the list. Fatherlessness. It says, influences of the world around them, plus the invisible sway of Satan, causes varying degrees of selfishness and evil to develop as children grow into adults. They grow into adulthood, but they're still children, rebellious children. Even after Christ comes to remove Satan and to bring in peace, prosperity, and happiness, the process will have to begin with children. Children will have to be started out right. Adults will have to be de-educated, have to unlearn all the false knowledge, ideas, and philosophies they have before they can be taught the true way toward peace and successful and happy and useful lives. It says, utopia will not appear suddenly at the appearing of Christ. He appears after a lot of destruction and bloodshed, universal destruction, in fact. But then the healing begins, as it always does, with repentance and conversion. The healing begins with obedience to God's laws, with obedience to God's commandments. The healing begins with God's system of education. Think about a world in which children will grow up in homes where families are intact, where fathers are teaching their children about God and about God's commandments, and where fathers are administering loving correction where necessary to help keep those children in line, to prepare them for what's described at the end of that quote I just gave to you. The way toward peace and successful and happy and useful lives. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.